It is 25 minutes after the hour on a Transcendent Tuesday, and we welcome Dr. Don Clark to the, you're not actually in the studio. Don is a resident of Garden Valley, Texas, about 80, 90 miles east of Dallas, and it's a beautiful area, hills and trees and green spaces and cattle ranches and big fields and one sterling, gorgeous, beautiful vineyard.
I have five varietals that we are growing, so yes, we call it vineyards because we have a Blanc de Bois field and four of these new varietals coming out of UC Davis in California. So we're seeing how they will adapt and grow in our climate.
Mm-hmm. Which at the moment is very, very hot.
Which is why we're talking about
it. Nice segue here. Yes.
Good, good segue. It is hot. It's 80 degrees. It's going to be 102 by about 2 or 3 o'clock.
No, it must be a cooling trend in Garden Valley then, because we're 108 here and along I-35 in Central Texas, and it has been hot. And I'm reading about hot temperatures in Europe and hot temperatures all over, and it sure is tempting to say, "Oh, the globe is warming."
It's 66 right now.
Oh, that's except in East Dakota, it's not warming.
In northern Minnesota, 76 degrees is our high temperature.
And we're perusing an article from the Cornwall Alliance that talks specifically about global warming and the methodology they use to calculate and predict more global warming. And Don, it looks to me like there's a whole lot of wild guesses involved in putting these things, all these computer models and estimations, and especially when they look back in history at temperatures. How soon do you suppose there were accurate records of temperatures being kept? I mean, not only did they have thermometers, but they wrote it down and filed it away so that global alarmists could research it.
Oh wow, that's a question for David. I mean, he can do some research on that.
He is the staff historian.
When they started recording,
1888.
Recording
1888.
There you go. So since 1888, we have recorded temperatures at very selected places, probably on the globe, mainly, I would guess, mainly Europe and maybe here. But, obviously in the developed world at that particular time would they have recorded the temperature. But we've been recording temperatures. We've got all kinds of devices now that record temperature. We've got satellites. We've got satellites that measure the solar radiance, for example. It's obviously not temperature here on Earth, but we can measure the temperature on Earth via satellite and infrared imaging and get an estimate of the temperatures around the globe. But then, of course, we've got all these temperature stations, atmospheric stations, certainly around our country and around the globe as well. Now, the problem with all of this, you know, they're trying to put together computer models that are saying, okay, what is the temperature going to do? What is our weather going to do? And if you've ever listened to a weather report, or even nowadays, you can look at your phone and get the weather moment by moment, if you wish. And one thing that you realize very quickly is that the predicted weather is may or may not happen. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it doesn't happen the way they're predicting. And so
50-50.
Yes, you can't, if you can't predict, a couple of hours ahead of time, and it's very difficult to do that, obviously, then how are you going to predict and say, as this article started off saying, that, hey, we've got the hottest temperatures ever on Earth.
Well, it says that the hottest day on Earth ever was this 4th of July. It even broke the record that was set on the 3rd of July. Well, I got news for you. It's hotter today here than it was then. by 4 or 5 degrees. But how do you extrapolate world temperatures from all the here? Let me give you an example. What if it's 100 degrees in Los Angeles and it's 50 degrees in New York? Does that make it 75 in Chicago?
Yes.
Oh, you're taking the average. Not necessarily, no.
I'm saying averages have no business here. They don't mean, they're meaningless. Well, averages are meaningless.
Yeah, so anyway, the point being, they didn't start developing these computer models until 1979, and somehow we're supposed to believe that they can go back into time, into the, you know, into back when the Earth began, and know what the temperature was. And there is some indications as to, let's say, how sunny it was, because you can look at tree rings, and if you've got a fat tree ring or spacing between your winter tree ring, if you will, the dark areas, then you would say, oh, that had to be a warmer summer, or that had to be there was more light maybe that year than the previous years. And so they've made some estimates based on that, but you know, how old is the oldest tree here on Earth? It doesn't go back eons of time. The oldest tree is about as old as it as when the global flood was, which was about 4,500 years ago. You're limited there with that particular data. And then they try to look at ice cores and say, oh, you see all these bands of dark areas and light areas, that also tells us what the temperature is. And not really, because those light and dark areas, do they really represent seasons, or do they really represent what was happening perhaps post flood? And we had we went into an ice age because of the events that were taking place. One of the events was the Earth breaking apart from one major continent called Pangaea, breaking apart into the continents that we have today, and then drifting apart. And then in that process, of course, you have all kinds of volcanic activity, which throws up ash into the atmosphere, which then blocks the sun, which then makes it cooler on the land, which then makes it snow, and hence you get the ice age. So unless you take these type of things into account, there's no way you're going to come up with an accurate measure of temperature, you know, anywhere close to what it was back before, you know, the 1800s, when the temperatures were actually physically being recorded by such devices called a thermometer. All of this scare about, oh, this is the hottest it's ever been, and yes, the Earth is heating up, so we've got to do something about it. Well, did you know that, for example, in major cities, let's just take Austin. They referenced Austin in the article. So let's just take Austin. Austin temperatures have increased not because of anything in the atmosphere, or not because of anything that putting pollutants in the air and stuff like that. It is because of an ever-expanding city of concrete and steel. And there's such a thing now we recognize as urban heat islands, where the temperatures can be up to 7 degrees hotter during the day and 5 degrees hotter at night because of concrete, and the concrete, of course, absorbing the heat during the day, reflecting, you know, especially asphalt, you know, is going to absorb.
Boy, all you have to do here in Central Texas is walk across an HEB parking lot when it's 108, and you feel that heat radiating. That is hot.
Yeah.
Carol just got a Facebook message from somebody, I think it was last week, that somebody in Texas baked a loaf of bread in her mailbox.
You could do it,
and it took a couple of days, but she and I don't know that I'd want to eat it, but I mean, she put the dough in there and it baked up.
And what a surprise it was for the mailman too when he opened that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he went to put some mail in there, and there's a loaf of bread.
You're going to report that mailbox.
But, the point being that if you're measuring temperatures in these big cities, which, of course, they are, I mean, Austin in 1923 had a population of 40,000. Today, it's over a million, and with the metro area, it's like 2.2 million people, and more are flooding there because, obviously, Tesla is moving their facility somewhere around Austin, and so you got more people coming in to that area, one, because you don't have all the tax burden that you have, let's say, in California, so people are leaving those states, and they're coming to a freer state here in Texas. And so we're getting, you know, the shift in population. And you would think that, oh, my goodness, Texas is burning up, and so people wouldn't come here. But, in fact, people are coming here in droves, and, of course, they're going to Florida in droves, not because of the heat or, you know, lack of cool. It is because of economic opportunity.
But it's making, the large cities are huge heat sinks that absorb and re-radiate heat. So temperatures are bound to be higher in big cities. So how do they average their readings to predict global warming and to measure the change? And that seems to be the crux of the matter. They're predicting what's going to happen based on wild guesses, inadequate databases for making predictions. The computer models that exist, I'm told, and the UN has solicited computer models to forecast global warming from all countries around the world. And they've got like 30 or 31, I think this came up a couple of weeks ago, and they have like 36 models now. They've all been wrong, except one, which was the Russian computer model, which was not predicting global warming. And so the computer models are not reliable indicators. What I'd like to know, the useful information would be, what kind of temperature cycles have we seen, say, the last 500 years? Have there been cycles of warming and cooling, warming and cooling, warming and cooling, and might not this be just another cycle that we're in? Or maybe it's a longer-term cycle than we can see because of lack of available data from historical times.
Well, we do have some pretty good data, even during the Industrial Revolution, where there was all kinds of pollution in Europe, for example, because of the factories that they had, the coal factories and everything else. And we know, for example, that what we were experiencing today, really, on an average, across the world, is no different than what we've experienced before. So, yes, the temperatures go up and the temperatures come down on an average, and some years are going to be warmer than other years, and some years are going to be cooler than others, and that's just the cycle that we have. And there's many reasons for that, but the primary reason is what's happening with the sun, and the sun then affects what happens here on Earth. For example, we are entering, that is the South, is entering in to what's called El Nino, which is, the hotter part of the oceans warm up because the sun is producing more energy because it's got more sunspots. This we know. And so it's going to be a little bit warmer. And we know that, last year and the year before, for example, we had some pretty hot summers. This year has been relatively mild, at least here in East Texas, from last year. And it's only, we're only now getting above 100, whereas last year, the beginning of June, we were already in 100, and we kind of stayed there for the rest of the summer. This year, obviously, it hasn't been that bad, and we continue to get some rain. every now and then, about once a week or so, we're getting at least some rain. We had some rain on Sunday. So our temperatures haven't been as hot as they've been in the past. And, you know, the Earth goes through cycles. We often think that the Earth is completely a spherical ball, but it's not. It's actually elongated, and this causes some difference in temperature in a cyclic manner as well.
It's actually it's a wider diameter at the equator, right, because of the spinning of the Earth.
I believe that's correct, but
that's because the Earth isn't a solid core. It's spinning at 1,000 miles an hour, which gives us the 24-hour day because of the circumference of the Earth. I mean, all that is connected,
right?
So that part's predictable.
The Earth kind of wobbles a little bit too, and that's going to have an effect. So you have all of these things that if you're going to build a computer model, you got to take all of this into account, and it's going to be extremely difficult to predict anything with any degree of accuracy. The other complication in all of this is all of the temperature probes that we have around the world. They're it's reported that like 96% of the temperature stations produce corrupted data. Which means that they're not calibrating the weather stations once they put them up and they start collecting data. They're not calibrating them on a regular basis, which any scientist knows, at least a physical scientist knows, that you got to calibrate your instruments every time you use it. In the winery, if we didn't calibrate our pH probe before we took a pH measurement, we would get wrong pH measurements, and we would make more wrong decisions based on the wrong pH measurement, and therefore produce terrible tasting wines because of it. So you got to calibrate your instrumentation, and that apparently is not being done.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another article that we want to turn our attention to here, too, and it has to do with something we've discussed on our program many times, and that is the self-healing capabilities of the Earth. Now, in the past, we've talked about, for example, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere being sucked down into Antarctic Ocean and then converted to another substance underneath the ocean water, and so it's actually taking CO2 out of the air and in essence defending itself against total corruption. Here's a new discovery that says the atmosphere is also cleaning itself. Can you explain that to us?
Well, it's a new study produced by folks at University of California in Irvine. That's actually where I did a postdoc several years ago out in UC in Irvine, California. And what they have found was, with electrical charge that's in the atmosphere and the water that's in the atmosphere, the electrical charge is producing active hydroxide compounds, or I would bet that these are free radical compounds. So they're very reactive OH groups, if you will, in the atmosphere. And the OH groups then bind to hydrocarbons. And they did some studies in the lab with the various hydrocarbons like cyclohexanes and stuff like that, and other possible pollutants in the atmosphere, and they find out that, wow, you know, these hydroxyl groups that are produced in the atmosphere can oxidize the compounds and make them harmless. So it's the atmosphere actually has the capability. This is a preliminary study. It's not, you know, anything necessarily completely definitive, but it's a hint that the atmosphere does indeed clean itself by these hydroxyl radicals that are floating around in the atmosphere that are produced naturally by the you know, sunlight, for example, and the electric field, and the water droplets that are, you know, in the air. You know, obviously things evaporate, and we get moisture in the air, and that moisture then is helping to cleanse our atmosphere. And one of the compounds they talked about was nitrous oxide. And, you know, nitric oxide would be oxidized, for example, into nitrite, you know, forming molecules, which then would be less polluting than nitric oxide.
Yeah, and I think maybe we're losing audio from you here, Don. So I just want to mention there's another article connected to this that says scientists say the ozone layer may be fully healed within 50 years all by itself. That is, without man taking extraordinary measures to fix the whole situation. Don, do we still have you? Okay. Yeah, we're not getting audio from you here, so...
I'm getting audio.
Okay, hang on a second. I'm losing a call.
I can hear.
Okay.
Things are going
kind of crazy here on this end. At least is what's getting out on the air. So I think what we're going to do. David, are you there?
You want me to? I'm here. You want me to report? And I will keep going.
No, I'm thinking something else is happening with the internet. I think we're going to lose this all together. So we're going to go to music and see if we can reconnect here. Okay.
I think it's you.
I think it is too, because okay. I can hear you.
Yeah,
I can hear you perfectly, David.
Don and I will continue. You go ahead and do what you need to do.
Okay. Well,
you know what that is. What that is. Right?
Hang on a second
here.
Hang.
What I'm talking about? Okay, we're recording, Don.
No, yep. We're recording.
Yeah, we're recording, and we'll patch that in later on. The I did some research, and the Earth is called an oblate spheroid, and that means it's flatter on the tops, top
there
on the bottom.
There you go.
It's
right,
just, and that makes squished down. Yeah, and so it's
makes,
a little chubbier at the around the waistline, which is, you know, yeah, kind of like the rest of us.
Right, a little chubby, because but we're not spinning. If we were spinning so fast,
it'd be even worse.
It'd be worse. We'd get very dizzy.
Yeah.
So yes, the Earth is not completely spherical, and we found out where it is not. And but this going back to the hydroxyl groups that, you know, we have in the atmosphere, we've got. Which is, you know, can clean up the pollutants in the air, and it'll be interesting to see over time what this research pans out, because coming from California, you would think it would be a radical article, but these are actually good researchers, apparently, and they are coming up with some interesting chemistry. And they point out that this is just a beginning article, and more research will be needed to help explore this in the future to see exactly how this affects our atmosphere. But as Jim pointed out, that our ozone layer. Remember, years ago, there was this big scare that. Fluorocarbons were causing holes in our ozone layer, and everybody was going to get burnt up because we didn't have any ozone anymore, and we had these pockets of ozone. Well, the ozone is healing itself, and not because we have any, I don't think we have necessarily any less fluorocarbons in the air. Yes, we've stopped using for the most part fluorocarbons, but at least in refrigerants, although the refrigerants today still have fluorocarbons. So it's the Earth has this tremendous ability. Earth and atmosphere, the universe has this tremendous ability to heal itself, And wouldn't it be, isn't that what we would expect from a creator God, that he would be able to anticipate, because he knows the end from the beginning, exactly what we would need to continue life here on Earth? So all of the scare tactics that are being used, mainly by politicians, and they obviously recruit some scientists that will parrot what they want to hear, because they'll give them more grant money because of it, then they produce this scare, and oh my goodness, we need to do something, and we need to do it now. And one of those things is everybody needs to be using electric vehicles.
Sure. And am I back? Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
And yep, so the net of all this is huge amounts of wealth are transferred from one place to another around the earth to combat something that's always existed and apparently always will until the end comes.
Yes, yeah, until, you know, the bowls of wrath are poured out.
Until the real reset happens.
Global warming.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'll be global warming, but it's not going to be done by man. One of the angels is going to be pouring out the bowls of wrath.
I think so.
And so, God's wrath.
I think so. Well, Don, David, just so you know, I've got the full recording here, too. We never stopped recording here, so.
Okay. All right.
So we're in good shape. Don, thanks very much. We're educated, and you've done elevated the conversation once again. We count on you to do that every Tuesday morning.
In the last half hour, the temperature has zoomed up to 70 degrees.
Sounds.
Oh, boy.
I think we better head for the hills or do something.
I don't know where you go.
I gotta get outside before it gets too hot.
Yeah.
That's right.
Don, have a terrific week. We'll see you in about 7 days or thereabouts, okay? Assuming we're all still here, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Bye-bye.
All right. See you, Don.
Bye.